Tilehurst End podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Hi guys, welcome along to the latest show in the Tilehurst End podcast feed. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetilehurstend.com. Thought I'd keep up with what we started last week, whereby I'd post our PubChat Extra YouTube audio, where this week we'll be talking about whether the EFL should have got involved with Huddersfield after their decision to change 10 players against relegation-threatened Birmingham. It's a debate that's done the rounds this week, and we thought we'd give our say, but not just what we think of that issue, but what could be done to maybe clarify that in the future. So stay tuned for that. It's with myself, Becca and Mark, who were all on the Tilehurst End podcast episode number 128, which I hope you've now had time to listen to and digest. So if you have done, thank you very much. If you haven't, go on, go and do it. Anyway, just thought I'd round up a couple of the latest headlines from the past couple of days. It's been fairly quiet. We covered quite a lot of news bites in that main edition of the show, but just thought I'd give a quick update on the injury situation heading into that Burton game. Now, Stephen Quinn, Paul McShane and Joe Vandenberg in the long-term injuries. And it's mixed news for the trio. More good, I'd say, than bad. Andreas Alderink, who is Yapstam's number two, was put up for the media conference this week. Yap having a bit of time off. And he has said that both McShane and Vandenberg are in contention to play at Burn on Sunday. McShane dealing with a calf injury. I think Joe Vandenberg's a hamstring problem as well. But the fact is that neither have featured now in at least 6-7 weeks for McShane. You have to go way back to March the 11th in the 3-0 defeat at Preston. And as for Vandenberg, he featured 6 days later in that 2-0 win up at Sheffield Wednesday. But then neither has featured since. So it's left a big gap in the side. I mean, we've done pretty well really without them. We picked up several good results and we've obviously qualified for the playoffs. But both of them have been on the verge of returns, according to Yapstam, for quite a while and have been training. And for whatever reason, neither have made it back. So the news that they could feature on Sunday is a welcome boost. Really, they're in kind of the last chance saloon, because if we win at Burton, that will mean our first leg is away at Craven Cottage. And as we said on the podcast earlier this week, just do not see how Yapstam can possibly risk just throwing one or both of them into such a high-pressure game away from home. Now, if there was an injury crisis, say Tyler Blackett and Liam Moore were both struck down with a virus, maybe you take that gamble, and I could certainly see them both being on the bench. But if they don't play against Burton, I just think it's such a big gamble to make in an unnecessary scenario. You know, you might as well stick with the players that have done so well for the last 6-7 weeks and just treat McShane and Vandenberg as backup options or something. If you're defending a lead or you really need to change it up, they're there for you. So hopefully they can both feature on Sunday. No guarantees of that. This wasn't a case of them saying, yep, they're both going to play. This was they're in contention. As for Stephen Quinn, he is back training. We've talked about this a few times now. He had a problem with one knee that kept him out for most of the season. Made his return with the under-23s, and that flared up a problem in the other knee. He's still training. We had a couple of questions into the Twitter as well about Dennis Rackles and what's happening with him. Now, he's been featuring quite regularly now for the under-23s, but he's just not being selected by Yapstam for whatever reason, whether he thinks he's not quite fit enough or whether he just thinks he's got better options. He's not been in the mix with people like Yaku Mate, Joseph Mendes and Lewis Grab and all on the bench. It is quite hard to see where Dennis Rackles would fit in. I mean, maybe we'll see him on Sunday at Burton. It would be a good opportunity to see if he's got anything to offer. But I just think he's being squeezed out by the competition at the moment. The other big name on the injury front is Gareth McCleary, who limped out against Wigan just before the half-time mark. He's been dealing with a range of problems and niggles that Stam said he's been dealing with pretty much since January. Now, the news ahead of Sunday's game is that he's unlikely to play, but he is in contention to come back for the playoffs. So, again, it's very difficult to see a scenario where they risk McCleary. But as someone who's, unlike McShane and Vandenberg, been fairly active recently, you know, you can just give him that extra week off and then see if he's fit to start that first leg or maybe on the bench. It'd be really good to get involved in the mix, because we did just see flashes of that against Wigan on Saturday, putting in that lovely ball for Kermigan. If you can get him fit for that game, it would be such a massive boost, really. A couple of other bits of information and news that have come out in the last couple of days. One is good news if you're a Reading fan who lives abroad and you're listening to this right now, because from next season, you will be able to watch every Reading game live streamed. Now, this will cost, I think, around about, they're saying the pricing point is going to be around about £110. What that equates to in your local currency, I don't know. And it won't be available for those of us living in the UK And also certain games will be blocked out if they are being shown by a local broadcaster. So if you're in America and Fox is showing the game, I don't think you'll be able to watch that. But again, I'm sure we'll get more full information as the service launches. It's a real step forward, really. I mean, I can completely understand why the rules are there to prevent 3 o'clock kickoffs being shown live. But you know, as more more fans tune in, this was an inevitable step. And you can't see it being too much longer before, you know, they... The clubs and the Football League in general have to just hold their hands up. I mean, I don't want to be overly, and I'm not condoning this sort of behaviour at all, but you can only imagine that with streams now being offered to people living abroad, it won't take much for those sort of streams to work their way onto various pirate sites and illegal streaming sites for fans to take them in. I mean, you know, you don't have to go very far to ask someone, you know, what, you know, how do I see a Premier League game at 3 p.m? And I'm sure a lot of people are already doing that. It's not a secret. It's not something that's being kept in back channels. It's fairly common practice now. So with this news, you would imagine the sort of same thing will be happening in the EFL. So I'm sure long term they'll be looking into a solution where, you know, fans at home can tune in. Whether that, you know, in America they have the same thing, you know, local TV companies show every game, but they're blacked out a lot of the time unless they're sold out. So, you know, maybe we'll sort of see the same thing. Obviously regional, in terms of, you know, in the UK, regional blocking will be pretty hard to do. I'm not sure what the technology is like. You know, where do you draw the line? You know, if you live in London, do you get to see a Reading game? But if you live in Berkshire, do you not? Who knows? But as I said, I can't see it being too many more years before everyone's just allowed to watch it. And because that's just a way. And they'll just look to monetize it in that way. But it's good news, as I said, in the short term, if you're an international royal. We've got an article up on thetirelessend.com. If you want to go and check that out. Also, congratulations to Jan Kermgen. He has been named the EFL Championship Player of the Month for April. A very well-deserved achievement. I'm sure everyone will agree. The cat was out of the bag 24 hours early by Paul McShane, who posted a story on his Instagram showing Jan picking up the trophy. So, oops. But there you go. Congratulations to Jan. That's a very much deserved. So, that's about it. Well, there's a couple of other articles up on thetirelessend.com. One relating to Jack Stacey and his time at Exeter, written by one of his academy teammates, Lewis Ward. So, go check that out. We've also got more opinion pieces on the whole Huddersfield debate. We've had one from Ollie Allen and one from Dave Handbags Harris on an issue that you will hear us discussing very shortly on the Pub Chat Extra, so go check those out. And of course, we'll have all of the immediate reaction to that Burton game on Sunday up at thetirelessend.com. And I can't leave this little news update without giving a plug to the Patreon campaign. That is our crowdfunding page. That is at patreon.com/thetirelessend. That is patreon.com/thetirelessend. Consider it our electronic tip jar. The same way you see that little, you know, pot of change on a bar, or, you know, you leave a little couple of quid on the bill after a meal. Do the same for us. If you like what we do, if we're helping you get through your day, if you just think, you know what, you know, these guys, I'm going to help them out. A couple of quid, 10 quid, 15 quid, 20 quid, whatever, a pound, it doesn't matter. It all really does add up. You know, we have regularly well over 1,000 people listening to each episode. And, you know, if every single one of those people donated £1 a month, you know, imagine the things that we could do, the equipment we could buy, the projects we could launch. So just, as I said, if you haven't already joined in, please do. And if you have, an extra massive thank you, because you guys really are in the elite VIP circle. And you have the thanks of all of us here at the Tireless Den. Anyway, that's enough of my waffle. As mentioned, go check out thetirelessend.com for all the latest news and opinions. And in the meantime, this is our Pub Chat Extra that is recorded on YouTube. So I encourage you to go to youtube.com/thetirelessend to check it out in all its full glory. But in the meantime, here's the audio. Hope you enjoy, and we'll speak to you soon.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tirelhurst End
and facebook.com/TheTirelhurstEnd.
Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of The Tirelhurst End Pub Chat Extra here on our YouTube channel, or if you're listening to this on our podcast feed. However you are listening or watching us today, thank you very much for taking the time to do so. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of TheTirelhurstEnd.com. I'm delighted to be joined this week by Tirelhurst End writer Becca Allen.
Hello.
And Tirelessend assistant editor Mark Mayo.
Hello.
This week's topic, as you can see at the bottom of your screen, or if you're listening, as I'm going to tell you, is should Huddersfield be punished for fielding a weakened team? Now, this comes about after Huddersfield have been subject to a Football League investigation
after making 10 changes for their game with Birmingham last week, which they went on to lose 2-0. Now, ordinarily, that probably wouldn't bat an eyelid. Unfortunately, Birmingham are involved right in the thick of a relegation battle. So their fellow relegation threatened sides, Nottingham Forest and Blackburn, not particularly happy with this. They think that the integrity of the competition has been undermined a bit by the fact that David Wagner's gone out and just said, well, we're already in the playoffs, we're going to make 10 changes. And they're not particularly happy. Now, Ollie Allen has written a great piece on this on thetarlesson.com that I very much encourage everyone to go and check out. But I thought I'd get your opinion on it, my good folk. Starting with you, Becca. First of all, do they even have a case to answer here? Should this even be an issue, full stop?
I guess it's up to David Wagner what team he wants to play. If he wants to make the 10 changes, then that's fine. You can see why that there has been speculation that they're in the playoffs and it's affecting other results. But if they're players that are named in their 25-man squad, then what's the issue?
Absolutely. I mean, that is the key thing, Mark. I mean, you name this 25-man squad. Mm. You know, you have them on the back of the programme every week. Should you not be just entitled to use them whenever you feel like it?
Yeah, well, if it was a bunch of 17-year-olds, then I might take a bit more of an issue with it. But the thing is that if you have, you know, as you say, you pay these players thousands of pounds a week, you have them on your team sheet, you have them with the squad number, they're Championship players. Yeah. And you're playing Birmingham, who are a team who are in Championship trouble, but Huddersfield, as a team that aren't in Championship trouble, have earned the right to exercise their squad freedom, as it were. The thing
their
that we
constitutional
have,
right.
Exactly, their Second Amendment, whatever that is. But the thing is,
sorry, American viewers.
But the thing is, with the Chequered Trade Trophy is an example where they said to the League 1 and 2 teams, you can only make like 5 changes or so per game, and if it was injuries, then you could sort of make more or something like that. And it ended up in a bit of a farcical situation. And I think if you install that on a Championship league week by week basis, you kind of end up with a situation where a team would make 6 changes and then they get fined, but they say, oh no, only 3 of them were resting and 3 of them were tactical. And you can't, you know, obviously fine teams for tactical changes.
Becca,
in a
do you think
situation.
Do you think Mark Warburton and Tony Mowbray have got a point? Do you think that at this key stage in the season that Wagner should respect the very fact that, you know, they are scrapping for their lives? And that when they had to play them, they had to play them with a full strength side. Should Birmingham not have to do the same?
I can see why they'd be annoyed at that. But would they be complaining if it was them that was playing? I don't get the whole thing with it's. If they were in that position that Birmingham were in, they wouldn't be kicking up. So
yeah,
I can see why they're annoyed and I can see why they're frustrated. And I think if we're in that situation and that had happened to us, and I think we'd all feel that it was unfair, but it's just one of those things, I think.
Well, it's kind of happened. I mean, we've been on, I wouldn't say both sides of it, but in more recent years, Reading themselves, when we played Watford ahead of that FA Cup game with Bradford, made a whole raft of changes. You had a complete, almost academy side playing, didn't you?
Yeah.
But because it was March, no one batted an eye. Now, Watford were going for the top two that season. Mm. But I didn't hear of the teams in third, fourth and fifth going, investigate Reading, you know.
Yeah.
Why aren't they facing Football League action?
And that was kind of in the situation as because that was 2 days before we had a FA Cup quarter-final replay. So it was kind of a situation where you can find us, but we have bigger fish to fry. And we have been on the end of it in the same way as that.
But that's what David Wagner's probably thinking.
Exactly, yeah. And in 2008, when we got relegated, of course, we lost to Fulham, or we fell down because Fulham won away at Portsmouth the week before Portsmouth played the FA Cup final. I don't think they made loads of changes, but a lot of the sort of Portsmouth sort of reaction before the game, and we all kind of knew it, was that they were focusing on the FA Cup final, as you would. So it kind of comes around and goes around in that sense, as with everything in football. I can't remember any other times specifically that Reading have done it, to be honest. There was the 07 FA Cup third round tie at Man United, where we made loads of changes and they were kind of mocking us for it, and then we went and drew 1-1.
Yeah.
So it doesn't always guarantee the result, does it?
And we've seen it a lot of times when teams have already confirmed for the playoffs. I mean, Reading, I think when we played Derby ahead of the last playoffs, you had people like Jake Taylor and stuff playing in those games. So teams do make changes when they've qualified for the playoffs.
Yeah.
I guess the only thing I'd say is then, should they do something then? If you're going to say, okay, you can pick who you want and, you know, it's tough luck depending on who you fancy, should the league maybe do something like they've trialled in Scotland, where you split the teams off for the final third or so of the season so that every game matters and you haven't got scenarios of, you know, teams that are already in the playoffs resting team players against teams threatened with relegation?
I just think that kind of it takes away from the fun of football. I think it's you still got stuff to, regardless of who you're playing, you've still got stuff to play for. And like, who would have known, potentially Huddersfield might not have been like guaranteed the playoffs. So I think just leave it as it is.
Mark?
I think the other side of the coin is if you're having Birmingham, if they were playing Blackburn and then, say, Nottingham Forest were going away to Ipswich, and Nottingham Forest are hosting Ipswich on the final day of the season, Ipswich are a team with nothing to play for. All eyes on next season and the summer. They're on the beach. And being on the beach is, in many respects, even worse than playing a good team who are making changes. Yeah. Because teams who are on the beach are, you know, there's no pressure on them. And, you know, Reading have been a team on the beach and gone and beaten Derby 3-0 on the final day of the season to deny them playoff access before.
Absolutely.
But teams on the beach are traditionally the ones that you want to face for an easy result. And I think there's nothing you can do about that. Splitting the league still has that as a potential problem. So it's kind of one of those things of football, I'm afraid.
If the EFL do decide to act, should this be, do they need to come down hard on Huddersfield to set an example to future teams? Or would you almost kind of say, okay, well they need to act, but like softly, softly, just because of all the reasons we've been talking about?
Yeah, I think if you're going to start finding that, if you find them like a substantial amount of money and you give that money to the teams that have been adversely affected, those teams will then say, actually, no, being relegated to League One is worth £10 million. So we would like £10 million, please. And that's just ridiculous.
Mm.
So I think you kind of do it like reprimand them, maybe a sort of charitable fine, as it were, a community sentence, the equivalent of.
But then does that not, Becca, just send out the message that just keep doing it, we don't really care?
It goes back to the thing of if the players are in that squad, then why can't you play them? I think I agree with that in terms of just the worst that's going to happen is that they're going to be fined. They're not going to have points deducted. It's not going to be that bad. And because I don't think that it warrants that. I think it's just got to stay as a bit of a fine, really.
Yeah, it's difficult. And like you say, it's where do you draw the line? I mean, you know, you can say, oh, God, well, you made 10 changes. But, you know, what happens if you rest your top goal scorer, your leading goalkeeper and your mega amazing £10 million midfielder? Mm. Is that not fielding a weakened side? It's where, like I say, it's where you draw the line. I can very much understand why people like Mark Warburton are upset. As we touched on, you know, I was just annoyed as any Reading fan when I, you know, saw Pompey putting out a half-arsed effort in their final Premier League game of the season to let that helped Fulham to win and send us down. So we've been on both ends. But like I say, earlier in the season, nobody bats an eyelid. And yeah. Nottingham Forest and Blackburn, they've had all season to get these points. They've been playing teams at other times, have had distracting moments, FA Cup games and bigger fish to fry or certain amount of games in short periods of time. Get your job done early and don't be relying on your opponents do you favours. Get your points in the bag and you're not worrying about it.
Yeah, at the end of the day, the team that wins the league is always the team that deserves to win the league. And the teams that get relegated, not necessarily always the worst teams, but, you know, pretty much routinely are the worst teams in the league. And if that's Forest or Blackburn or Birmingham this season, then that'll be because of their quality as a team, not because of one result against a better team that have played a weaker team on the day.
So going forward then, do either of you think that there needs to be a hard rule instituted in terms of it? Either way, as in a rule designed to say this is the amount of changes you can make or this is the amount of changes you can't make?
If they want consistency, then they've got to do that. But I just... I don't see the issue with it at all. I think leave it as it is, and it's football, isn't it? It's just one of those things.
So, Mark, if you, they would say anyone in your 25-man squad at any time, you can name them. Is that a fair rule?
Yeah, I think so, because as we say, they're in your 25-man squad, and if, like as my point earlier, if you play a team of 17-year-olds in a full championship game, then there would have to be some serious discussions going on, and I don't know exactly what you'd do about that, but you would have to basically do the equivalent of throwing the league into dispute, because it is a league, it is the professional competition, and as long as you're putting in 11 or a majority team of professional, you know, well-known in certain ways footballers, and I haven't seen the Huddersfield team exactly, but I don't think it was all unknowns. They hadn't all signed them off the back of a truck. Like, I wasn't playing, so it could have been far worse, couldn't it?
If they're in the squad, David Wagner obviously thinks they've got value, because I think all of them had at least played some sort of part this season, so they're obviously good enough. So, as far as I'm concerned, that's up to him. He's earned that right by managing them for 45 games, that, you know, he knows his squad, and if he thinks that's best, fine. I just think, just put a rule in. Just literally say, from now on, name 25, 30 players at any one time. You can maybe have a couple of windows to change that, but as long as you pick from, I don't know, say 16 of your 18 matchday squad, you're fine. Mm. And I think you just leave it at that. Like I say, it just seems to me like sour grapes from teams that are struggling. Just as the same way that in my heart of hearts, I think just the same with Reading and Fulham and Portsmouth. It's like, if we'd got our job done, we'd got a point against Spurs the week before, wouldn't even be talking about it.
Yeah, exactly. I think also, just to finish on, basically you find a situation where this only happens, we only talk about this once a season at the absolute maximum. I can only think of about three or four times I've ever thought about it. So if it was a constant problem, then it'd be addressing, or you need to address it, but it's not quite that prevalent, so I think we're okay.
No, Becca, any closing thoughts?
I think it's the sour grapes thing. I think it kind of takes the focus away from the fact that those teams down there, look at the teams that are down there, but all three teams are big teams. Mm-hmm. And taking that away from going, oh, well, Huddersfield have fielded the weakened team, and that's why we're down there. I think it almost takes the pressure off of them a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's completely sour grapes.
Absolutely right. Well, I think that's a fairly unanimous outlook from our panel. I await the comments of angry Forest and Birmingham fans.
Be a lot angrier if they go down, won't it?
Absolutely. Well, as I said, join in the comments section. Let us know what you think. And of course, if you want to submit a pub chat topic for yourself, you can see the contact details in the bottom corner of your screen. We're at facebook.com/thetarlestend. On Twitter, we're at thetarlestend. And you can go to thetarlestend@gmail.com if you want to send us a piece of electronic mail. And of course, if you aren't watching this on YouTube, head over to YouTube. It's youtube.com/thetarlestend. And I'll finish with a plug for the Patreon campaign. That is our crowdfunding campaign. It's our digital tip jar. If you like what we do, if you want to see us do more videos, more podcasts, anything like that, put your hand in your pocket, give a couple of quid or more than that, whatever you fancy giving. Join that elite circle, the VIP, and have that special place in our hearts.
If you're David Wagner and you fancy that, just they backed my corner up, then
exactly,
let's go and throw some dollars in there.
David, you know what to do. Patreon.com/thetarlestend. patreon.com/thetarlestend. Anyway, for myself, Becca and Mark, adios.
The Tarlehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlehurstend.com.